Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers for Blizzard Watch, and I've got not one, but two co-hosts with me today. You know them both very well by now. First up, we've got the other author of Know Your Lore on the website, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Hello, everybody.
How's it going?
I'm kind of looking forward to the Wonder Woman movie, so that basically, it's been going okay, I guess, for
There's
once.
There's a new trailer, and I haven't seen it yet. I gotta watch it after we're done recording this.
you should watch it. A lot of my friends have, I think some of my friends are still a little leery because it's, you know, they don't know what it's going to be, but a lot of my friends watched it and were like squealing on Twitter, so I'm cautiously optimistic.
My sister is freaking out and really wants to go see it, so we may make that a sister day thing, I don't know, when it actually comes out. Good question. Anyway, other co-host, of course, he usually gives us regular details on the Shaman class on Blizzard Watch, but he also knows quite a bit about the lore, and that would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe!
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Better. My dog is not dying, so I'm happy. Like, turns out she was just mostly being a whiny butt. So
Sylvanas, right?
You made me hug my dog a lot this week.
Yeah, it was Sylvanas. She hurt her back, and unfortunately, like, I freak out because she's a beagle, and that's
she's
one of the things that
low to the ground.
She's low to the ground, but they're genetically predisposed to back issues. So I'm like freaking out, like, oh god, she's never gonna walk again.
She's a beagle. And
she's a beagle.
Why did I think she was a basset?
Liz.
Because
of
Liz.
Liz has bassets. That's right. Okay. No,
and they look
eagle.
Very similar.
That's a picture of her thing, isn't it?
It is. With her sticking her tongue out. Yep.
All
but
right.
Yeah, she's good now.
Good. It's always a good day when.
Am I still using my cat?
People who would argue with that.
Now I'm like, am I still using my cat? Are we still the cat and dog show?
I don't actually see an icon for you, Rossi. So I
okay.
There's no surprise cat face. Usually for the people that are listening at home and can't see what I'm seeing. Usually what happens on Skype is Rossi's icon is a very startled-looking cat, and then Joe's icon is his beagle sticking her tongue out, doing the whole blep thing. Yeah, so I'm usually doing this show with a couple of animals, and that's not the case today, because, like I said, Rossi, your icon's not showing up. Don't know why. Anyway.
I'll have to look on that later.
We're not even a minute into the show, and we're already way off track, so let's get back on track. This week, Chronicle Volume 2 comes out on Tuesday, on the 14th. We're recording this show on, what is today, the 11th, the 12th?
12th, I think.
The 12th. Yeah, it is the 12th. Okay, Daylight Savings Time just, like, threw everyone for a loop, probably, because I don't know why they decided to do this to us. Why did you decide to do this to us, federal government? Please stop.
And why did, like, other governments do it? Like, I live in Canada. Why are we doing it?
Just let time be.
The nearest answer I can think is because we did it the year before.
Let time be. Just let time be. You know, Nosdormu has a lot to say on the whole, you know, merits of meddling with time. We really shouldn't be doing it. I'm just saying. Anyway, So Chronicle, Volume 2, it comes out on Tuesday. Obviously, we will not be covering that this week because we don't have the book in our hands, folks. So
Despite daylight savings time, we cannot actually travel forward in time.
No, we can't. Much as I would like to, we cannot. So we will be seeing that on the next recorded show of Lore Watch. We will be doing a deep dive into Chronicle Volume 2. So just, you know, prepare yourselves for that. But to pass the time until then, we've got several emails from you guys, and I figured we'd go ahead and answer those because why not? That seems to be a thing. Yeah? You guys don't mind, do you?
Well, I mean, I love answering questions from our readers because you guys come up with some weird stuff, which helps us come up with even weirder stuff, and I love it. It makes me happy.
We only have 3 emails today, but each of these emails have multiple questions in them, and all of the questions were really, I mean, they were long, but they're really well thought out, and it was all stuff that I wanted to talk about, particularly this first email, which goes into Nighthold raid spoilers, okay? So right out the gate, guys, if you haven't finished the Nighthold raid, maybe come back and listen to this after you have. You can do the entire thing in LFR now. It's really not that difficult. I would go finish it on Tuesday if you haven't done that, because Tuesdays, for whatever reason, the runs seem to go really smooth, really fast, really painless. Anyway, so let's get to that. Our first email is from Varagon, who says, "Hello, Lore Masters. Varagon here, warrior from the Dalaran server, Patreon backer, and frequent question asker. So today I have 3 questions, but before we get to start, I should openly warn blatant Nighthold raid spoilers to follow." Okay, first question. We're just going to answer these one at a time. First question. In Elisande's pre-fight monologue, she tells the raid that she not only foresaw our coming, but also that in the 3 days given to her by Gul'dan to make her fateful decision, she spent that time peering into all possible futures and finding only one path where her people survived. However, at the end of the fight, a time echo appears and says something that has left me scratching my head. "In all possible futures I scried, I did not foresee one in which you were victorious. Time eddies about you in fits and starts. Nothing is certain. If this timeline we are currently playing through is supposed to be the quote-unquote 1-2 true timeline, how could she not see this future coming? Did Nuzdormu giving up his power over time at the end of Cataclysm change the rules of the whole 1-true timeline thing? Did entering an alternate timeline and bringing back an orc warlock as a souvenir mess up the timeline? And most of all, why does time act so strangely around our characters?" Keep in mind that this is one question, but there are actually like several questions within this one scenario. So go.
Well, I'm going to just flat out say, I'm not like a huge fan of this writer, but he's written some interesting books. A guy named David Eddings. He wrote a book with a character named Sparhawk.
Yes.
And the character of Sparhawk was essentially called Anaka. He was, quote unquote, without destiny. And that meant you couldn't predict what he was going to do. Like, the gods were terrified of him because he could do anything and they couldn't come up with a predetermined counter for it. And that's us. That is what we have done throughout the entire time we've been doing this stuff. We travel through time. We travel to alternate dimensions.
And we indiscriminately break the wings of butterflies.
Yeah, we bulk, we bulk godlike beings that really should be able to take us out no problem. And yet they're constantly having problems. If you go back to the Algolon fight, he says it much the same thing. You know, you prevailed against cosmically calculated odds. I mean, he's got the Titans, you know, basically crunched the numbers on existence and gave him every possible scenario, and yet he lost, and he didn't see it coming. It's much the same thing. Elisande is actually even working on the same power, because Elisande is powered by the Eye of Amon-Thul. The Eye of Amon-Thul is powered by Amon-Thul, who is the guy who empowered Nuzdormu in the first place. Elisande is probably the only being on Azeroth who might have access to something more powerful than Nuzdormu himself in terms of time travel. And that's before he gave up his power, obviously. And it's the same thing. The Titans' orderliness basically works like a giant actuary table. It's essentially, this is everything we could possibly foresee happening. It's not the case. It's not like literally that they see all futures. They see everything they can possibly conceive of. And we casually disregard what they can possibly conceive of and do it anyway. And you see that throughout the game. It's happened over and over again. The whole thing with the Infinite Dragonflight, the reason that we stopped them was because we went and did the impossible and closed the time loop. We basically put Nuzdormu in his box. Okay, now I've seen my death, which I already foresaw. Now I know it's you guys are going to be the ones who kill me, because you just did. Okay. That's great. So, yeah, that would be what I would say.
I mean, not only that, but I mean, we also have that the whole Warlords of Draenor thing, because that's a whole alternate timeline dimension thing that's still open and still attached to Azeroth that happened conveniently after Norsdamu was put back into his box and then gave up all of his, you know, worldly or super awesome timey-wimey stuff to the nth degree to help kill Deathwing. Like, we have tampered with time so much as players in that regard that I don't think anything around us can be predicted, because like Rossi said, we don't play by the rules. We don't. And then everything we do has these massive consequences that we're just like, it's okay now. Like, we're good. Right? Like, this is the immediate fix for the solution. We'll worry about the next things like next week. It's fine.
I think the Gul'dan thing is a good point too. I think Anne's talked about this before. We were talking about Gul'dan a while back, and it's like, this Gul'dan isn't Gul'dan. He's not the Gul'dan we know. He comes from another timeline, and we don't even know how different the Draenor we just came from is from the Draenor we originally met. You know what I mean? It's like, because Chronicle's coming out, and we've already seen some stuff that seems divergent from the Draenor we were just on.
Yeah, so very wildly divergent.
So we don't even know.
I think the other thing to look at here, too, is that she was given 3 days by Gul'dan, and that was 3 days in which, how long were they behind that shield?
10,000 years.
10,000 years. That's 10,000 years of history that they didn't see, that she wasn't aware of. Theoretically, none of them were aware of. Like, they knew that there were outsiders, kind of, sort of, but not really. Because,
well, yeah, they seem to basically think like the entire world was destroyed and they didn't care enough to look outside.
Right.
You know?
So maybe that kind of affected what she was looking at too, was you know.
See, and I always kind of took it like they kind of understood what was out there, but didn't, just straight up didn't care. Like,
well, I mean, to a certain degree, when they first made the barrier and they first made the night well, it's pretty blatantly stated that they, you know, the world was in chaos. They, you know, the continents had been ripped. One continent had been ripped into four pieces and scattered across the world. They were sitting right on the edge of this enormous vortex that was sucking everything into it. I mean, it took them a while to get past that. I mean, granted, they're elves. They have time to then, by the time that they got to a point where they could look around and the world had calmed down, they turned inward. They set up the night well. They didn't need anything outside the dome. Why would they care?
They settled in for a very, very long night of night well and chill.
Yes.
Like 10,000 years worth of it. So
let's just come on over and we'll stare into the mystical vortex.
And I mean, I feel it's oddly appropriate with Alessandra if you've ever done one of the daily or one of the weekly quests where you have to go to her personal quarters. That is a weird place.
I feel like.
And there's a gnome in there for some reason. Like, I'm just gonna throw this out there.
Is this like a Nighthold quest?
Yeah, it's a Nighthold. It's a Nighthold quest where, like, but it's a raid quest, but it's a world quest type thing where you go and there's an extra teleport thing. So if you haven't done the Nighthold yet, there's magical spheres that you can click that takes you to Elisande and then to the very, very top.
I have just done it on LFR, and I have a feeling this is not there on
LFR. You can do this in LFR, actually.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, it has to be there. But when it's there, there's a third option that says Elisande's private quarters, and it takes you to a different part of the spire just outside of where her room is. And it
is... Do you need the whole raid group to go there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not going
to
happen.
It probably won't happen in LFR. No, you can do it in LFR. It probably won't happen unless it's like everybody wants to do that. But it is one of those weird scenes out of... It is Eyes Wide Shut, the elf version. And for some reason, there is a gnome. There is a single gnome on a bed there.
So Illidan isn't the strange set of quarters, in other words.
That is correct. Yep. It seems to be a very much elf thing. I have no clue why. I just want to know where the gnome came from. Like, I really do. I just want to know where the gnome came from, of all things. Because, like, theoretically, there were no gnomes until we got there.
Do you remember when they were getting ready to move Dalaran? There was that one that was stuck in the wall?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So it was probably an accident, sort of like that. Just randomly showed up. It was like, elves! I don't know who you... Oh, you're going to be nice? Okay, well, I guess I'll stay put. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just one of those weird, surreal moments where I'm just like... This is the most out of place thing in this entire raid. And I've been punching demons and elves for like hours. And there's a lone gnome. I don't know how to process this.
I think, though, you know, part of it may be that, like, when Elisande was originally doing the scrying and trying to figure out the best course of action to take, she didn't take us into consideration because we weren't part of that consideration. Why would we be? We were from outside this thing. She didn't know us. She didn't know what we had done. She didn't know what we were capable of. So she didn't really see us coming because she just didn't take us into account when she was doing all this scrying. Why would she? This was before we even came to the Broken Isles. This was when Gul'dan came to her. And Gul'dan wasn't even from this world. Gul'dan was from elsewhere. Gul'dan was part of that whole Burning Legion thing.
Yeah, the original Eld Gul'dan was from another world. This Gul'dan's from another world again. Even worse.
Like a different reality.
Like there's no way to... Probably couldn't foresee him either. So
no.
At this point, she's just doing her best.
She's just doing her best with what she has. And I'm kind of sad by that whole Elisan fight. Because at the end of it, you know, when she's talking about it, and you know, when she says that quote, the whole, in all possible futures I scried, I did not foresee one in which you were victorious. And time eddies about you and fits and starts and nothing is certain. I like that idea because we are kind of other. We are so, so other, comparatively speaking, to any other world that the Titans have, you know, put together or dealt with. Because we're not just Titan creations. We're like this weird evolution between Titan and Old God to a degree. We're kind of born of both, thanks to the Curse of Flesh. So it makes us this rogue element. And I think that as far as Nosdormu is concerned and that whole thing that happened at the end of Cataclysm, that Alex Straza was very, very blatant when she said, the Age of Mortals has begun. Basically, it's in our hands now. We can do what we like with it. And apparently what we like to do is we like to go to alternate realities. We like to mess things up. We like to come back with, you know, strange souvenirs that promptly open portals, green vortexes in the sky to let a bunch of demons in. We do not make the best life decisions so far. Our track record is pretty terrible for the Age of Mortals
thing we did,
right now.
The first thing we did after Cataclysm was go to some isolated island that hadn't seen anybody in 10,000 years
and blow it
and
up.
Blow up its sacredest place.
Yeah.
After blowing up its second sacredest place first as a kind of an intro.
I mean, it sort of just tracks with our like how we do things.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, we're this whole Age of Mortals thing, we really aren't doing the best of jobs, but
I'm gonna just say it. The Horde needs to get a war chief who will chill the heck out.
Yeah, that
just one war chief who just chill out.
I want Thrall to come back from retirement because I feel like that he could like steer. I feel like we need the dad back.
Nah, I want
no,
I want,
no.
I want Bane.
Bane would be good too. I would enjoy Bane.
Bane would have been my choice too.
I would enjoy like Bane with Thrall in that advisory.
Yeah, Bane can be the war chief and Thrall can be Cairn.
Yeah.
And he's constantly going, you know, this is how you do it. And he's like, yeah, okay, later. I'll listen to you later.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would probably work. Anyway, okay, so second question here. In Mythic Nighthold, now keep in mind that I haven't done Mythic Nighthold, but I am familiar with it. Like, I read up on it and everything. I don't know about you guys. Anyway, in Mythic Nighthold, upon defeating Gul'dan, when Khadgar tries to put Illidan's soul back into his body, we are left to fight, quote-unquote, the demon within. Upon his defeat, he says that he will yet claim this Titan. Presumably, he means Sargeras. Since this kind of talk implies that the demon inside Illidan isn't Sargeras, is this the demon that Illidan took into himself when he became a demon hunter? Do we know which demon that is? Also, what does Sargeras want with Azeroth? To corrupt it? To take its powers as his own? I feel like I should clarify this because it was... where is it? I have the quote here. I have the quote queued up here. When you kill him, when you kill the demon within, he says, how is it even possible? He will yet claim this Titan. That's the exact quote, when you kill him. And when he says, he will yet claim this Titan, it very much implies that he's not talking about himself.
Yeah, I figured he was talking about
Sargeras.
He's talking about Sargeras, which means that whatever that thing was, it wasn't Sargeras. So who was Joe?
Well, I mean, that's the question, is who knows how many demons Illidan has consumed or taken their power. It could be any number of them. It could be an amalgamation of them. And because I've seen this fight, and it really is an interesting encounter, and there are that is that interesting moment. But I really just think that it is an amalgamation of all of the what Illidan has left that links him to the Legion. Because let's not forget, like, yeah, he's super powerful. Yeah, he's... super, you know, oh, go fly a kite, Sargeras. I'm going to go do my own thing and ultimately overthrow you type thing. But the point is, he still accepted power from the Legion. He still, that's where some of his, I don't want to say majesty, but where some of that comes from. And so there's always going to be that link back. And I think that this was just sort of the amalgamation of all the things that he had consumed that linked him to the Legion. Because when he, after the fight, he's, I don't want to say diminished, he's smaller. But he's a lot smaller than he was prior in our prior interactions with him. He's not this big hulking monstrosity that he used to be.
So I have
he's
a theory.
Slightly closer to normal human size.
I have a theory too, but I want to hear Anne's first.
I have a theory. Okay. Illidan, the way that Illidan was created wasn't at all like how current present day demon hunters are created. That was something that Illidan came up with after he had already become a demon hunter. So he didn't do that whole ritual thing where he was like, oh, I'm going to fight my inner demon and all that other stuff. Because the way that it works with regular demon hunters is they fight whatever demon they have that drove them to this path of vengeance, right? So in the Illidan novel, for instance, the main character, he's fighting a Fellstalker that killed like his family. It was the one that kind of set him on this path. That was the thing that he had to confront. Illidan didn't have to do that. What Illidan did, and the way that he got all demony in the first place, was he absorbed the powers of the Skull of Gul'dan. Like, the original Gul'dan. Not the strange alternate reality one.
Gul'dan 1.0.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, was that 1.0 whispering?
It's possible. I mean, he would arguably potentially be the strongest, right?
Yeah.
Out of anything. So it's entirely possible. And it also would make a little bit of sense if that was the case just by the nature of the fight, taking
like
the context of the fight.
1.0 was trying to possess Illidan so that he could go ahead and kill 2.0, who was the inferior version. I'm just wondering if we were seeing like a conflict between, it was like a war between Gul'dans. I don't know. Rossi, what do you think? I'm sorry.
Oh,
my
ooh, yeah.
theory is based on the fact that it was Khadgar trying to put Illidan back. And Khadgar is wielding Atiesh, great staff.
Yes, he is.
I did the Atiesh quest with a friend back in the day. I helped him get his Atiesh. One of the things you had to do was go to Stratholme.
Oh, yeah.
When you got to Stratholme, a big old demon showed up named Atiesh. You pulled him out of the staff, and then you fought him to get the staff, essentially. You needed to beat him into submission. You've got Khadgar wielding Atiesh. I don't recall him ever beating Atiesh into submission.
So do you think Atiesh was trying to, like, catch a ride?
Why not? Or for that matter,
That's
who
a
knows?
Good if, idea.
What else does Atiesh do? Like, what is this demon? If you look at him, he's very much, he's similar to a Dreadlord, but he's not quite.
He looks like Illidan.
And he's the Hand of Sargeras. That's his title.
Yeah, he looks just
Atiesh,
like Illidan in that demon
hand
form.
Hand of Sargeras.
I'm going with that theory.
That's a good theory.
I think that's the most plausible.
So if you've got this demon who is the Hand of Sargeras, why wouldn't he fight to keep you from putting Illidan back into his body when Sargeras is the one who wants it? And he'd be living in the staff, so if Khadgar's got the staff, he's carrying the demon around. Maybe the demon is the demon within Atiesh.
So what and what if that was the reason why Khadgar was acting weirdish throughout an entire expansion? Like, what if that's the explanation for all that weird stuff that he said and did during Warlords of Draenor? Like, little tiny influences from Atiesh.
Yeah, I don't think it was that necessarily, but I think...
He might be trying to find a way to shut the demon up.
I don't know.
Because, he is using that staff. And that staff... Here's the thing, too, is I don't know if the demon got into the staff when Sargeras was possessing Medivh, or if he's always been in the staff. I mean, his name is Atiesh. And the staff's name is Atiesh. Did he get named that because he was put in the staff by Sargeras? Or did Sargeras, I don't know the actual history of Atiesh beyond the fact that Medivh was using it. You know what I mean?
You remember
on the regular show, Rossi, that somebody asked us, would we want to see like a coffee table book of various things? This is one of those things that I'd like to see a coffee table book about, like the explanations behind the various weapons.
Yeah. I mean, I'd also like to know, it says here, when you're looking it up on Wikipedia, it says it was passed down to the line of Guardians of Terra's Fall up to and including Medivh. And it's like, who passed it down? Because it's obviously not the staff that Adrian was using, because you can get that staff.
But here it says too, and I thought I was looking it up as well. I thought it was interesting. It says it was forged from the seed of hate. So what seed of hate? Is this something that maybe Sargeras sent down to the, you know, Azeroth way long ago and just happened to be come across by, you know, mages of the Garantor and decided, yeah. Oh, this thing is super magical. We should shove this in a stick.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here. We don't know yet. So
such a good idea, though. I like that idea.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's interesting. Okay. But there's a lot. It could be a lot of things. But anyway, yeah, there's my guess. That's my theory.
All right. As far as the other part of that question, what does Sargeras want with Azeroth to corrupt it to take its powers as his own? We know that he wants to stop it from becoming a Void Titan, and presumably he's kind of, like, infatuated with it.
Yeah, there's a thing with the Scepter of Sargeras dialogue that indicates that he's got a crush on Azeroth.
He has a concept. So this whole invasion is basically the Burning Legion demonic equivalent of handing over the slip of paper that says, I like you. Do you like me? Check yes or no.
I have burned the universe in your name.
Do you like me?
Yeah.
Check yes or no.
Sargeras, just make a paper thing and go like open, close, open, close, open, close, and then you'll find out.
He's a cootie catcher. Anyway. All right, so third question here. When the Titans were imbuing the Keepers with their power, Khazgroth gave his mastery of earth and forging to Arcadus. Later, when Sargeras was about to kill his brethren, Norgannon sent each of their spirits off into the Nether, where they were eventually slammed into the Keepers they empowered. Given that we unceremoniously murdered the heck out of Arcadus back in Vanilla, does that mean that we also killed Khazgroth? He didn't give his powers to any of the other Keepers, after all. Also, as an aside, am I the only one that finds it wildly amusing that Chronicle made Arcadus such an important figure, given how easily, early, and anticlimactically he and Iron Anya are killed in-game? Love the podcast, love the shows, and love being able to help make them happen with Patreon. Keep up the good work and keep watching that lore. Thank you. So, Arcadus, thoughts, you guys?
I've actually written a good deal about Arcadus because I was doing that whole, like, you know, War of the Titan Forged thing back in a while back. And I'm not so convinced that we have actually killed any of the Keepers,
mm-hmm.
including Helya.
Yep.
There's, first off, they're not made of flesh. You know, Arcadus's power is over rock and stone because he was given this power by Khazgroth before Khazgroth ever inhabited him. And it's pretty substantial. The Arcadus we fought didn't have to be Arcadus at all. He could have just animated a statue and sent it at us. He might still be like in a whole underlevel below that, currently, you know, dreaming his Titan-y dreams.
Isn't that kind of exactly how the encounter went anyway?
Well, there's a big statue there and you do a thing, a ritual, and
it turns,
eventually,
yeah. Yeah.
A statue comes out and starts pounding you. That statue certainly looked like Arcadus, but it doesn't mean it was. And it doesn't, for that matter, mean that it, you know, Arcadus could just use another statue. You know, who knows? The guy, this is a dude who was so powerful, like, that he made a lot of the artifacts we've got now. Like, the artifact weapons we're using, Arcadus forged several of them. He wasn't messing around. I with a lot of the Keepers, it's debatable how dead they actually are. Like, I would not be surprised to see Logan pop up again. I wouldn't be surprised to see any of them pop up again. You could rip out Rodin's heart, and he kept going with his heart torn out. You know, I mean, Li Shen was, I don't know if he ate it or was wearing it or what. I forget how it worked, but the dude pulled it out, and, you know, Rodin treated this as like, yeah, I got an ouchie. My heart's gone, but it's fine.
He did something to it where it was him, because basically what you took to... What you took to Rathion was the heart of the Thunder King.
Yes, and that was basically from Li Shen. So
Li Shen popped it out of Rodin and popped it into him. So, like, maybe he had a little door on his chest. I don't know.
Well, to keep in mind, too, that Li Shen himself was also a construct.
Yeah.
That's the problem when you're dealing with these constructs, is they can do stuff like, you know, give themselves an...
Then was it organic heart with Rathion?
Oh, and Rathion, I mean, was a black dragon, so if it was a big rock, he could probably eat it anyway. Earth and stone's their thing.
But I mean, also, I mean, calling it a heart, it that could just be a term for it, right? Like, we've seen Titan technology.
Maybe it was a rock and he stuck it himself, and then he got, you know, hit with curse of flesh, and it turned into.
Or maybe it was like the discs of an organon. Maybe it was just an information, something that held all that information, that coding inside of it, that was just part of the being, and it was called like the heart, or we referred to it as the heart because we just happened to take it out of the chest.
I know that
the way that Anduin reacted, the thing.
It probably looked pretty hardy.
Yeah, it sounds like it looked pretty. It looked like dragon, little dragon, just straight up taking a bite out of this gross thing.
But I mean, I know that dungeons and raids do things in certain ways when you see the new version of a dungeon, but I straight up murdered the Maiden of Purity. Is that what she called? The one in Karazhan?
Yep. And she's back
Virtue.
Again.
No, Maiden of Virtue.
Yeah. Maiden of Virtue.
I straight up murdered her back in BC. Killed her dead. Then you know, and yet she's back. You know what I mean?
She's a little more messed up than before, but she's back.
She's kind of changed her tactics a little bit, but she's still there, yeah.
So it's entirely possible that constructs don't die that way. Like you can destroy them, obviously, because they were fighting a war.
It's
Odin
a
lost his...
theoretically, just by virtue of the word, a construct should be able to be rebuilt.
Yeah, you reconstruct it or what have you. So we don't know. Honestly, in terms of Arcadius as a character, one of the things I love about Olduman is that it is a like level 30 something dungeon that has all this important lore information that comes back still to this day. I think that's great. I wish more of that stuff had come back. Like
I remember doing that dungeon way back in vanilla, and I was absolutely fascinated with the discs, particularly when you took them all the way to the entrance of Oldham, but you couldn't actually get into Oldham. And I was like, what's there? This is a big old mystery. This is a really cool big old mystery. And I'm only level like 30 or whatever it was.
You could barely even get up. You could barely even get up to the thing to turn the quest in because there were level 40 something elites wandering around. You had to ride you through the desert, and you were like I was level 37 when I turned it in.
Yeah.
So I had to ride through the desert where the Scorpid mod started at level 42 and went up from there. And then you get there and there's these elite level 40 something giants wandering around, and you're like, I got to get around them. And you finally weaved your way around, turned in the quest, and you turned in the quest fast because you would get killed. Like they were going
to
come over.
I found a good place to hide and do it. Like there was a place, if you came in from like the backside of that particular ridge that was, I don't think it's even there by the entrance anymore, but there used to be a little ridge that kind of led up to the whole blocked off entrance to Oldham.
But they blew open the door, so it's not.
Yeah,
you can't get to.
You could kind of duck in there and hide behind and mostly avoid aggro. But yeah, it was turn in the quest real quick and then screenshot as fast as you can to get all of the information that it was telling you, because it had information for you.
Yeah, quite a bit. And you were like, click, 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 click. Oh God, giants. But yeah, Arcadius though is a fascinating character. He's one of the ones that came. It was him. Tyr and Irania came down together, and keep in mind this, the Sundering hadn't happened yet, so it was all Kalimdor at the time. They're the ones that came down, and they got as far as Tyr's hand before Loken sent two Chithraxi, one of whom is Zakajaz, and the other one I can't remember his name, but he's the one that basically created Zul-Gurub by dying there. And the two of them attacked Tyr and the others. No, it's not Hakkar. I forget what his name is, but it's involved with the dagger.
Right.
But they got there, and there's this big fight, and it's all very important. And it's basically Arcadius is the reason that humanity and dwarves and gnomes exist in the Eastern Kingdoms, because he's the one that set up, like he's the one that assigned the humans afterwards. They were like, we want to stay in because they were like at Vrykul. They were like, we want to stay in Gard Tyr. So he set up, he built Tyr's tomb.
An artifact slime stuff?
Yeah, see it in the Shadow Priest one, the Warrior one, the Arms Warrior one, and more Shadow Priest stuff gives you, and it's also in Chronicle to a degree.
Okay, I need to level my Shadow Priest, so.
Yeah, the dagger
I'll
stuff.
I'll just add that to the list of alts that I'm leveling. Do that, because I want to see this stuff firsthand.
Yeah, the dagger stuff tells you a lot. It's really cool. As much as I don't want to play a Shadow Priest, the dagger stuff is really cool.
Okay, Joe, do you have anything?
No, I mean, you guys pretty much covered it. The only thing that I can think of, too, is that a non-lore side of it is I think that the whole thing with Arcadius in the beginning was before they really figured out what they were going to do now. So there's going to be a little bit of weirdness there because, like, yeah, we were able to take them down at level 30, and that may seem a little weird considering we're – or 40 or whatever, in that range. And that may seem a little weird now that we're, you know, taking on the same things at, like, 80, 90, 100 and so much higher than that.
Yeah, but you have to remember too that level isn't it's a game mechanic. It's not something that your character knows by looking that he.
I was gonna say that too. Where I understand that that's not a function, but it's also one of those things where I can understand where this seems out of place to players as a result of that, is what I'm saying.
Well, and you have a valid point there, because when these storylines were for, I mean, we go in and we talk about, you know, what it was like in vanilla to do these quests and how we're like, oh, it's a big mystery or whatever. When they were writing these things initially, it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, however long ago it was when they came up with these storylines. This was before Chronicle. This was way before Chronicle. And
oh, yeah.
And this was before they actually sat down and reordered everything and figured out what they wanted to do.
They don't have, like, a big map of where they want to go. That's not how they write here. Usually what they do is they take elements from things that have come before and go, okay, how can we kind of, like, what can we bring in here to, like, further the story? What kind of loose threads do we have hanging here? That was one of those loose threads that they had hanging there. Sometimes those loose threads are picked up, and sometimes they're just kind of ignored.
We actually just had a question about that, I think, three or four episodes ago, where it was our favorite unfinished storylines or storylines that didn't go anywhere.
That's
the same thing. That's the same thing that feeds into those.
So it's
Like there's a quest back in Wetlands. You guys remember it? The one where you first find out about, like, a Titan construct thing appears in the
Yep.
And I think they did something with it in Cataclysm. Like, they continued it a bit. But I didn't do the Wetlands and Cataclysm, so I don't know what happened there. But you found it, and this Titan figure shows up and is like, you know, this thing's broken. Don't mess with it. This thing's broken. Warning. And, you know, I forget who was even the guy you brought it to. It might even have been Braun back then, but there's like a whole, what is this thing? So, yeah, there was lots of stuff like that came out back in the day, and they didn't have a clear answer of what they were going to do with it.
So,
like, back then, Un'Goro didn't even have any Titan stuff.
Un'Goro had, like, the implication.
The crystal
pylons. The pylons and everything were kind of like, there was an implication that there was something bigger going on there. And they did refer to Un'Goro as, like, the petri dish of the Titans or whatever. But we didn't really know what that meant.
The Godlands? Yeah, the Godlands.
Yeah, we didn't know what that meant. And I don't think that anybody that was currently writing the game really knew what that meant. It was just
And it didn't really get touched again until Sholazar was a thing, really, right?
Like, until
and then that's when it started. And that's when it started being fleshed out.
All of a sudden, it's not a waygate.
And it's not a bad thing. It's just that sometimes there are going to be these things like Arcadis that get fit back into the puzzle later on, where it's like Rossi said, back then it was this really, really cool lore heavy stuff that you were doing very early on and made you feel like an epic adventurer in the game world. It did what it was supposed to do, and then it kind of dropped for a while, and then it got picked back up later. And now when they're reordering everything, they're like, okay, well, here's how we need to slot this back in, kind of, sort of. Here's where this makes sense to fit it all in. And we see some of that now. I mean, for all it is, and this is not a knock against them or a knock against them or anything like that. They piece together things too in their own harebrained schemes like we do. The only difference is when they write it, it becomes canon.
Yeah. So, you know, when you say that Arcadis, him and Iron Anya, they're killed so anticlimactically or whatever. Well, that was back then. That was before they even developed the lore to that point. So you
trust me,
have to
Iron
keep
Anya,
that in mind.
Iron Anya was not an easy fight the first time you walked in.
Oh, no, she was not.
She
wiped the floor with my group a couple times.
I remember doing...
Don't put the stick in...
Because Aldemon was actually a higher level dungeon than it is now, too.
It was... I want to say it was like level...
It was around Scarlet Monastery level.
Yeah, 38, like you could, 36, 30.
I remember going, I actually did Scarlet Monastery first, and then I did Aldemon. And I think I was like level 40 when I first ran Aldemon. And I was tanking it, and it was not, that was not an easy dungeon to tank, because it was just, the fights were, they were hard.
The tracks were brutal.
Yeah, but the Iron Eye fight was really hard, because she just, you know, she came out and just stomped on you.
Yeah.
Like, it was not an easy fight. So, yeah, at
but
the time...
But it was so cool, visually speaking, because when you put the stick in the little city and it did the whole beams of light, it was very... Yeah, it was throwback Indiana Jones, whatever you want to call it, but it looked really cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. Come on.
I don't know anyone who didn't like the look of it.
Yeah.
But I knew a lot of groups who didn't like the fight.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it was not easy.
It was tough. It was tough. Okay, so our next email is from Fellfire Dots, who says, "Greetings, Lore Watch. Fellfire Dots from Cho'Gall here, and I have a few questions that I hope you can answer and speculate on." Okay, so the first one involves Nighthold. "We were fighting Gul'dan the other day, and I noticed what he was saying before the fight. In the end, death will inherit this world, and she will be waiting. Who is she?" I'm going to answer that one real quick, because there's a contingency here. He says this line when you're there as a Horde player, and he says it as part of his opening shtick when you arrive as Ford, and he's basically there taunting you. And what he says, have you forgotten your humiliation on the broken shore? How your mighty war chief was stuck in the belly like a helpless piglet? Will you die slowly as he did, consumed by fell corruption and squealing for a merciful end? Your pathetic horde will fall to dust. In the end, death will inherit this world, and she will be waiting. The husk of Illidan will prove an ideal vestal for my master's blah blah blah. Anyway, in the end, death will inherit this world, and she will be waiting. The obvious implication there is Sylvanas.
Maybe, or whoever serves over the death sphere, or the sphere of death, as far as the cosmos goes, right? Because we don't know.
I'm thinking that since he's taunting you about war chiefs and being a horde player, he's talking about Sylvanas, because she's very directly involved with this whole, you know, death to the living, blah, blah, blah.
Rossi, have you done this fight as Alliance? Is a similar line done with this, or?
I haven't actually done the Gul'dan fight yet, no.
Okay.
I mean, the Alliance side, he says, have you forgotten your humiliation on the broken shore? How your precious High King was bent and broken before me? Will you beg for your lives as he did, whimpering like some worthless dog? Your pathetic Alliance will fall to dust. Your new boy King will bow down and serve me, as will all of you. That's what he says.
Yeah, because the only other thing that I can think of, too, is that it's just the personification of death in the standard way that it's been done for years in fantasy writing. And for whatever reason, death is always personified as a she. So I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe it is Sylvanas, because I mean, she is. Unless you read Terry Pratchett.
I honestly think it's Sylvanas just because he mentioned Anduin. So it makes sense that if he mentions. Yeah.
The correlation is there. And the implication there is that death will inherit the world, and Sylvanas will be there waiting for us to, like, raise us from the dead, and we'll all be dead, and it's going to be...
Although...
He's trying to sow seeds of doubt.
I mean, that would be interesting, though, I mean, to think about Azeroth being turned into, like, a death world, where, like, all life is wiped out, and Sylvanas just comes along and goes, and you, and you, and you, and you, and now we live forever. Excellent. Like, that would be an interesting implication. But again, he's also, like you said, taunting us. He's trying to get us to, you know, waver in self-doubt.
He's trying to get a rise out of us. And for Horde players, that's, you know, trying to poke holes at our current war chief, really. Anyway, so the second question, conveniently enough, is about Sylvanas. Second question. I am a big Sylvanas fan. The fight between her and Greymane was pretty awesome. What do you think Legion holds for Sylvanas? I'm thinking something to do with Alaria, sacrificing our artifact weapons, and maybe she sacrifices herself and or her sister on Argus, all in order to stop the Legion. She's our new warchief, after all, so I don't think she will die. Thoughts?
Yeah, because being a warchief totally immunizes you from death.
Yeah.
I know. Like, it's not like we haven't gone
particularly on the Horde side of the spectrum, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you, man. They can kill anybody. Don't think your favorite
several times over already with Legion.
Yeah, they can kill anybody. They killed some really big names this expansion. Don't think your favorite character is immune. As far as what's coming from Sylvanas, for her, I don't really know. I don't know if we'll see Alaria or not. I don't know if when they said we go to Argus, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means that there's going to be a fight set there in the tomb, and we'll see it that way. I don't know if 7.3 will actually have us going to Argus. I don't know yet. I don't think that's what they said at BlizzCon, but you know, sometimes
they
get excited.
To be the implication was that we are going to go to Argus. Now, whether or not this is going to be like a planet we can explore, or just like a subzone, kind of like the Timeless Isle, where there's one area that we can kind of explore, and that's about it.
Yeah, we.
Good
don't
question.
Not enough to really make a judgment on that. I don't.
It might be a portal like the whole, oh my gosh, I forget the name of it. But you know, when you were doing Firelands and Cataclysm,
yeah, no, I understand.
And there was that whole, you know, you go through the portal into the Firelands and you're trying to establish a base and all of that. And there's that big area. Mm-hmm.
The Molten Front.
Yeah, the Molten Front. It might just be a zone like the Molten Front, only it's Argus. Or
yeah,
it might be something bigger than that, like an entire new zone, like a little mini Suramar or something that we have to mess around with. We don't know. We haven't heard anything about it. They've just hinted about it.
The Timeless Isle and Tanan were both pretty big,
yeah,
so you know, it could be on that scale. We don't know. In terms of this, though, I mean, I don't expect her to die, because I feel like they have mileage to get out of her yet. Like I've said before, when I was talking about the various big three deaths and the Broken Shore, Varian's death felt awful, but his story was done. Like, you could make a case that Varian had done everything he needed to do.
I don't think so, but...
You could make a case for it, at
least.
I'm still mad about Varian.
I'm going to go on the record and say, I'm still mad about Varian. I don't think he should have died.
But I get where Rossi's coming from. I think you could make that case, yeah.
With Vol'jin, felt very much like a... To me, I don't want to say a bad death, because there's no good way to have fell corruption rot you from the inside out.
He didn't get to do anything, ever.
Yeah. Varian at least got to do things. He got to be the catalyst. Tyrion is the one that you're like, yeah, okay. That dude, you're done. Go away. You've served
death,
your purpose.
Tyrion's death was a very dramatic, the end on what was a very lengthy and a very involved storyline. Tyrion's storyline, we got to watch him progress and help him progress from this hermit stuck in the Eastern Plague Lands, you know, eating maggot meat that we brought to him, to this big hero that helped us bring down the Lich King. Like, he had that entire span of progression, and it was a joy to watch him. And when he died, was I sad? Yes. But at the same time, it felt like, okay, this is a good way for him to go. Varian had been going back and forth so much with this whole dual nature. Is he really violent? Is the Logosh taking over? You know, has he mastered his rage? Da, 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 da. It felt like he still had places to go because he had just finally managed to master that thing.
Yeah, but at least when he died, he got to die jumping off of an airship, killing a Fell Reaver by himself, taking
he
on the entire
He sacrificed himself, yeah. And
he got to at least
He
do
took
stuff.
A lot with him, yeah.
He did take Whereas, a lot with him, and he had a hero's death, which I appreciate. I feel like that his story could have gone elsewhere, and it didn't get to.
But Vol'jin got stabbed Vol'jin in the back, and it
me.
Just, yeah.
Because
and I don't think they'll do that with Sylvanas. I think that they understand that they need to give Sylvanas a story before they kill her.
Well,
I
not only
think
that,
they're gonna kill her.
I don't think they're going to kill her, but not only that, we also have the three Windrunner sisters available for the first time since
All
when?
Three.
Yeah. Like, we have in there's something that I've been waiting to see for years and years and years. And even with Sylvanas in the current status of the Banshee Queen, I want all three of them in a combat sequence. I want a cutscene with all three of them fighting against the Legion in some manner. And I want it to be an epic moment because that's what I want.
I just want to see their awkward family reunion.
Oh, it's
going to
happen. It's going to happen.
The worst part about that awkward family reunion is going to be when, you know, Sylvanas and Varisa meet up again and Sylvanas is like, hello, Varisa. And Varisa's like, yeah, how you doing?
Nice to see you again.
I didn't come live with you in the undead city. Yeah, I guess you're still upset about that? Just a tiny bit. And then Illyria's like, you work with orcs? Orcs?
You know what would be interesting, though? Is if Illyria and Varisa, like, die in the whole big coming conflict? Because you know darn well Sylvanas will raise them up.
Don't even invoke
that. I'm just saying.
I'd sooner see Sylvanas die than Illyria. Illyria just got back, man.
I would rather see it happen, but I could totally see them... I could totally see that happening, and Sylvanas being like, "Well, you don't have a choice now, so raise." Hey,
you
sisters,
don't see
we're together again.
Happen to Varisa specifically because she has two kids that we've never seen in game before. She has Ronan's children, and we've never seen them in game. They've been referenced in the books.
Illyria's got Arator. I mean, you know.
And yeah, she's got Arator, but Arator's all grown up. The kids are not all grown up, and we've never seen them. We don't know what they're like, but we do know that. They're Ronan's legacy. I mean, it's Ronan and Varisa's kids. They're probably going to be big players at some point.
I mean, I care about half of that equation.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sorry, you guys are mean to Ronan, and there's no reason for it. Ronan in the game was fine.
I liked Ronan. I have
Ronan
always
in the game
liked
was okay.
Ronan.
Ronan in the books made me angry.
Ronan in the books made me, I don't know.
He had a raptor army. That's great. I want a raptor army.
I kind of waffle back and forth between, right? Whether
have
I
you
like
ever seen one of my raids?
Like
I have a raptor army.
Okay.
Thank you.
But I kind of waffled back and forth on whether or not I liked Ronan. But the more that I go back and reread those stories, I mean, okay, the raptor army book, let's just pretend that one didn't exist. I know stuff happened in Night of the Dragon, but I really don't like thinking about it all that much because it wasn't, it was okay. However, Day of the Dragon, I liked Ronan in that because he was the Kirin Tor mage that really wasn't the typical Kirin Tor mage. He was the one that they really didn't like because he was so hot-headed and he just kind of went off and did his own thing and was like, yeah, you guys do your thing in Dalaran, I'll be over here. And the whole reason that they brought him back and kind of chained him in as leader to the Kirin Tor was because they were like, okay, we had all these years under Antonidas and all of these other mages who were like him, and they were very much about the rules and everything else. And that obviously didn't work because our city almost got destroyed. So we're going to just take a wild swing and stab in the dark here, and we'd like you to come back and lead and just, like, infuse the Kirin Tor with some new ideas and things like that. And he was like, I don't want to do this, but nobody else is going to do this, so I guess I gotta. And that was how Ronan led the character.
I'll say this much for Ronan. Whether or not you like him or hate him or whatever, he's very good in Tides of War.
Yes,
which is a good book in general.
He was excellent in Tides of War. And I liked Ronan. I don't know. I liked him. I thought he was a cool character. He wasn't one of those, like, uppity mages. He was just this kind of... And he was funny. I don't know.
Ronan had a sense of humor, and it wasn't the dad joke sense of humor that Khagar has.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, Khagar in the game currently can tell a mean dad joke, but nevertheless, it's, you know.
All right.
But yeah, as far as Sylvanas, I do want to say this much. One thing I do think we're going to see is we are going to see at some point Sylvanas pulling some whack-ass rabbit out of her hat, because that's what she does. You know, like the whole thing where she's just going to plague bomb everybody in Gilneas sort of thing. She'll pull something out of her hat that is going to be like, I cannot believe that's your plan. Because we already saw that once in Legion. Her plan was nuts. You know, the plan that got foiled, the Gen Greymane fight thing, that was a nutty...
Enslave all of the Valkyr all at once.
Yeah, yep. So there's going to be something incredibly crazy coming out of this person.
I don't know. I don't think that we're going to see Sylvanas go anywhere. Going back to Vol'jin, though, I was really upset about Vol'jin, and that was because I spent all of Vanilla and Burning Crusade and Wrath, really, waiting for Vol'jin to do something, and then we took back the Echo Isles at the end of Cataclysm. I was like, cool, Vol'jin actually gets to do stuff, and he was really cool in those quests, and I was like, great, we get to learn more about him. And then we get into Mists of Pandaria, and there's that whole storyline involving Vol'jin where he almost gets killed. Garrosh, like, turns on him, and then he gets his own novel, and that was great. That Vol'jin novel was fantastic, and if you haven't read it, you probably totally should. And then he gets made war chief at the end of it. I'm like, oh, this is great. We're going to finally see what Vol'jin is going to do as a leader, like, in this leadership role. And then we get to Warlords, and the answer to that is nothing, but he'll show up in a cutscene and at Tanan at the very end. And then we lose him entirely. We never got to see what he would do as a war chief. The answer to that was put us in charge. And that was it. So, yeah, I'm still upset about Vol'jin, and I'm just going to go on the record saying that. And we should probably move on because we've, like, sidetracked enough here. All right. So our last email here is, it doesn't actually have a name on it, or if it did, I missed it when I copied it over, and I apologize. Anyway, this one has two questions. We'll answer these real quick here because we are running out of time. First question says, hello, Lorewatch. Big fan of the podcast, been listening to it for over 10,000 years. That's a really long time. And eagerly awaiting my own copy of Chronicle Volume 2. So are we. My questions are, first, how is it that elementals evolve from inorganic entities into creatures of flesh and blood, as is the case with Dragonkin? The dragons are apparently natural, evidently without influence from the Curse of Flesh. Is their evolution influenced by the greater forces like Arcane Light, Fel, Void?
I don't think we can actually argue that they're not influenced by the Curse of Flesh.
Yeah,
we don't
can.
Really know.
I'm guessing that Galakrond kind of... Well, Galakrond was kind of like a...
He was still flesh. I mean, he was a giant
really
part of
flesh and gross.
But yeah, they have a thing that the Stone Drakes and stuff that we, you know, run into in Deepholm, and the ones that you get run into in the Throne of the Four Winds, the Wind Drakes. The theory is that they went to Azeroth at some point and started turning into Proto Drakes, which is interesting because it's like devolution. Like, because the Titan uplifted dragons look like drakes again, but the proto drakes don't. So there's that weirdness to it too. But that's similar to like Trogs, isn't it?
A little kind
Trogs, of, I think, yeah.
Trogs are more primitive than the earthen or the dwarves or us. I don't. Trogs are just weird.
Didn't it?
But I mean, I think
it's. I'm gonna go back to Uldumon here. Didn't the discs in Uldumon say that some of them devolved into Trogs and then some of, like round two of those constructs that were created made dwarves
instead? Well, no, they were actually the same ones, according to Aldemon. Again, the Aldemon ones, I've read them like 100 times.
Okay.
The Aldemon ones are really weird because they not only do they contradict everything we saw in Aldemon and all that stuff, but we've talked about how that stuff was faked by Loken, but they also kind of contradict themselves because at one point the Aldemon discs say that Matrix entities are usually made just out of the materials of a planet, but these ones were made specifically out of rock and stone to more effectively shape the planet. And that the destabilization sometimes led to dwarves and sometimes to trogs. Like, they both came out of the same, they were both earthen once. And that some turned into trogs and some turned into dwarves.
So one of those quarries that they got the rock from bad.
Or something. Yeah.
Maybe.
They didn't even know what the problem was. They just knew that some of them turned into trogs. And of course, we know that then trogs went over to like Pandaria and get turned into drummels, but I'm not sure I don't know what the Mogu did to turn trogs into grumbles, and I don't want to think about it too much. But yeah, the whole thing with dragons is we don't know where did the elementals get affected by the curse of flesh and turn into proto drakes, much the same way that earthen turned into dwarves.
So are we
and
talking
trogs.
About like the stone dragons? I'm having
deep home.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yes, exactly.
So the stone dragons came to Azeroth like, from de-devolved proto-drakes? Is that what you're...
That's the argument. I mean, I've seen it like mentioned in Chronicle and a few other places, but no one's like 100% on this.
So there
like,
was the drakes themselves were there. There were the wind ones, obviously, up in Vortex Pinnacle. Do the storm drakes in Stormheim, where do you think those fall into that category? I'm curious.
That's actually... I've always wondered that since we first saw them.
Yeah.
So are they... I don't know, man. Maybe
I think it's a de-evolution of fire because fire and lightning are really, really linked, especially if you've ever played a shaman, which you have. Fire and lightning are, for lack of a better term, brothers on the elemental sphere.
Yeah, but there's also like a lot of wind beings use lightning as well.
Yeah,
sure.
So that's one of the reasons that Thunderon could get absorbed.
There's a lot of
going on. So they could be devolved from they could be devolved or evolved from wind drakes for that matter.
I'm just
it's really
because see a bunch of in the Halls of Valor.
Yeah.
You know, you go to that one wing of Halls of Valor. Is that where they originated from? Was there?
Maybe. I mean, who knows? For that matter, you know that they could be conscious creations of Odin. Odin, maybe. he didn't like the
maybe he
the
made
aspects.
His own bigger, better.
Yeah.
Well, remember, he didn't like the aspects.
He didn't like
them getting
Maybe
empowered.
Maybe he made
so,
his own.
Yeah, he's like, no, I'll show you dragons. You want to have big, scaly elemental reptiles? I'll give you big, scaly elemental
and
reptiles.
They're going to have big chins.
Yes, I like large chins. So I'm sad now, and I don't even know why.
I can't
why.
Give
it's
them
like
a flaming beard, but I can give them one hell of a chin.
It's like I missed the chance to meet someone with a chin, even better than my own. Like, I could have met him, but it didn't happen for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't...
Second question here says, if you could change which zones the elemental planes would have seeped through during Cataclysm, where would you put them? Personally, I would have found it more interesting if the Abyssal Maw showed up elsewhere, like, I don't know, maybe Thousand Needles or the Hinterlands, anywhere where you'd least expect the deep ocean to start flooding. So, out of all of the elemental planes, you know, we had Vortex Pinnacle down in Uldum, we had the Abyssal Maw over in, it was kind of like off the coast of...
It was in the ocean.
Splashy area.
Yeah, it was kind of off the coast of the Easter Kingdoms anyway. But and then, you know, you had Deepholm was through the Maelstrom. Firelands was up in Hyjal. Where would you have shifted those two if you were going to make a shift?
I want Joe to go first.
Yeah, I'm thinking because the only one that I really disagree with really is where it popped up was probably, I'd have to say, Firelands. And where that came up. Because, I mean, it coming up in Hyjal, I understand why story-wise, but like... It seemed like these would have been better to naturally occur where they had more of a natural affinity, kind of, if that made sense. And so probably closer to where Black Rock Mountain is, not necessarily in the mountain because that's been done, but like starting to flood out into the surrounding area because it is already naturally volcanic.
Here's the thing, you're right, and I'm agreeing with you. And one of the things that's interesting to me about this is that we know exactly where Ragnaros was first summoned through, and it wasn't inside that mountain. It was the ruins of Thorason.
It was.
That's where he was first summoned through.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Thorason is destroyed, because he literally blew the whole place up. The only reason that Ironforge didn't get taken out is because the mountains were in the way.
Yep.
They kept, otherwise, you know, otherwise it would have been, it would have gone straight up. Yeah. It would have gone straight up through all those areas. The mountains shielded it. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it should have been like in the burning steps, like where the ruins of Thorazon are.
From a story standpoint, though, yeah, it makes sense for it to be where it was, because Ragnarok was a deliberate attack.
I understand totally. We're just totally talking about other cool places to have it.
Yeah.
Because I thought it would have been cool. I thought it would have been cool if, like, maybe that entire zone was transformed into, like, a molten version of itself. Like, Ragnaros is like, you know what? I've been here before. I blew this place up. Yeah, I'm going to rebuild it in my image. Time to make things awesome. And just light fire to things and have lava flowing everywhere. But the rest of them, I'm kind of okay where they came up, because it made sense, at least to me thematically, from an elemental point of view.
I am of the opinion that the Abyssal Maw should have been in the Maelstrom. I feel like that would have logically been the place where it would have been, because you're going underwater. As far as Deepholm goes, I feel like that entrance should have been elsewhere, more rocky located. But I'm not sure where that would be. And for me, I would almost put Deepholm over by Blackrock or Grim Batal. That kind of area, because that's Grim Batal was the last place that Deathwing was at.
Oh, you got me here, Anne.
What?
Oh, no, you don't put it in Grim Batal. Where is the largest concentration of Earth aspected Titan creations? Ironforge. Ironforge. It's literally an old Ironforge. Like, you have to go down Deathwing into old Ironforge.
Out of Ironforge. Exploded.
Hold on, because that would have been cool too, because you already have a ritual that was being done to commune with the Earth itself. That could have been a wonderful excuse for how that got opened up over there. It's, well, you know, you see, your king did this whole thing where he was trying to talk with the Earth, and, well, accidentally he opened up a straight shot to Deepholm. Like, that would make that would have made a lot more
Deathwing
sense.
Deathwing woke him up, and Deathwing came exploding out of the... And wouldn't that have made that whole, like, Council of Three Hammers even more awkward? Because it's like, well, I guess we can't fight over Ironforge because it's not there.
Well, I think you'd probably want to leave half, like, Ironforge there, but have, like, this enormous hole in the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, tear open the mountain, and there's this giant hole, and like, now Ironforge is open to the world.
There's just a vortex up
there. Exactly. Yeah, just blow that whole thing out, because Ironforge is much bigger than the part we see in game.
Yeah,
so you just blow up that whole, you have that whole,
the back half
airport,
of the mountain just goes
pfft. Yeah, and then it makes sense that he destroyed the bridge, because it's right there,
and the dam.
Like, why did he destroy the dam? And like, the he went from, you know, Dark Shore, and then he flew across the ocean and took out that bridge for no real reason other than I hate bridges. But this time it makes sense.
Hey, it
made
for a really cool trailer, just saying.
Oh, as long as you don't listen to the, you know, Pain Agony bit, that's a great trailer to watch.
And it would have been a great, great convenient spot for him, too, to go to Stormwind, because it was straight shot
right
north.
Right there, straight shot. Gosh, that would have been really good. Because the thing is like, the last time we heard anything from Deathwing prior to Cataclysm was Night of the Dragon, the novel that I don't like to think about too much. At the very end of Night of the Dragon, he's talking to Sinestra. He's not physically there, but he's got that kind of connection with her, indicating that he's buried deep beneath the earth in that general area. And that whole stretch from Grim Batal to Ironforge, theoretically, that was connected at some point, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had the whole underground thing going.
They had, like, the quote-unquote deep roads, but not really because of the Dragon Age thing, but kind of sort of like that. Like,
see, I was just
connected.
Playing Dragon Age 2, so yeah. I was just in the deep road, so you're messing with my head.
Yeah, I know, right? But, that I think that's the only shift that I would have made, because, and again, you know, the Abyssal Maw, it's all underwater, so it feels like, you know, having it under that vortex in the Maelstrom, it just feels like that would be kind of, like, appropriate. I don't think that I would move Vortex Pinnacle or any of the sky stuff, like Skywall, any of that. I don't think I'd move any of that.
There really isn't that many. You know, does it matter where it is when it's an air thing? It's happening in the sky
the
somewhere. So, yeah, leave it.
You can just move wherever it wants.
The fact that it kind of manifested outside of Uldum made sense, because there was that whole thing going on with Alakir and the Tolvir. So, you know, that kind of direct confrontation. Again, from a story perspective, it made sense in the same way that Ragnaros popping up in Hyjal made sense, where it was like, okay, the fire elementals, they are directly attacking this one concentrated area, so they're going to burst the earth at that particular, you know, point on the planet. Same thing goes for Vortex Pinnacle. They were really invested in this whole doomsday device, whatever thing, Titan technology, Tolvir, make them rock, make them not rock, you know, that kind of thing. It made sense for the air elementals and Alakiran to show up down there. Rossi, do you have anything else to add?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Ironforge, though, can you even imagine what that would have been like?
People would have freaked.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been really cool. Missed opportunities, folks. That's all right, though. Okay, so that kind of wraps us up for emails, and that also wraps us up for this show. Next time we come back, we will be discussing Chronicle Volume 2, because we will have had it and probably read it several times over by that point. Anyway, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And if you still haven't gotten your hands on Chronicle and you want to do that before it comes out on Tuesday, if you're listening to this show today on Patreon, you could still get your copy by going to blizzardwatch.com/chronicle2 and putting in a pre-order, or just placing an order if the book is already out. Volume 2 is showcasing the history of Draenor, as well as more into the history of Azeroth and the Dark Portal. It includes gorgeous art from Peter Lee, Alex Horley, Joseph LaCroix, and many others. And we will absolutely be talking about this on the next podcast. So again, if you want to get your copy, go to blizzardwatch.com/chronicle2, and you'll be helping support the show in the process. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
Kayla Itzinis. I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.